Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Underwear, armpit hair, many imitators, but no one compares.
Badass Women's Hour XL with Harriet Minter, Natalie Campbell and Emma Sexton on Talk Radio.
1, 2, 3, 4!
Welcome to Badass Women's Hour podcast with me, Harriet Minter. We're still all self-isolating because of coronavirus, so we're recapping a couple of our favourites. This week, it's Gabby Edlin talking about Bloody Good Period and how to collaborate with, quite frankly, the tastiest collaboration we've ever heard of. And if you need a laugh, the women from the middle are in and they are hilarious.
Now, we're going to talk about one of our favourite things, which is periods. Vaginas and periods. Because we are joined by Meredith and Gabby, founders of campaign Bloody Good Period, which tackles period poverty. Those of you that listen know that we love Gabby. She's been our badass of the week a few times, called onto the show. We're going to dive straight in because I actually want to eat one of the macaroons.
Yeah, they've brought macaroons in. So, yeah, where should we start? There's so much to talk about.
Let's start with the macaroons while I eat one. What's the macaroons all about?
This is Meredith. I have a company called Ooh La La Macarons. And I also...
Is it macarons?
Yes. Macarons is French.
God, I always say macaroons.
It.
Yeah, no, I didn't until I realised macaron, that was common.
Macarons. Yeah. So I'm an entrepreneur. I have a macaron company, but I also have a creative agency that works with brands and organisations. And I like creating things that start conversations. And I came up with the idea. I read about the amazing work that Gabby was doing with Bloody Good Period. And I was really shocked and outraged, not only about the whole concept of period poverty and the fact that some women in the UK can't afford sanitary protection each month, but also with the idea that people just are embarrassed to talk about periods in general. And I just think it's an absolute outrage. So I approached Gabby and I said, I want to create something that's going to get people talking, and I'm going to use a company that I have, and I'm going to create tampon macarons. And I was a bit nervous when I reached out to her because I was a little bit like, might she think it's too much? And she immediately got back to me and was like, it's amazing, let's do it. So I created the tampon macarons to raise funds for Bloody Good Period, but also to raise awareness of the fact that period poverty is such a big issue in this country.
And so to take a step back, because I was just diving into the box, I forgot to say that your company is called Ooh La La.
Yep.
Ooh La La. And you are Meredith O'Shaughnessy.
Yes.
Yes. I just wanted to eat the what's in front of me.
It's got that time of night. Yeah,
exactly.
Sugar levels
back
low.
To the beginning. Okay. And so, you know, how do you wake up one day and get to that point? Because there are lots of campaigns that you could have taken on.
I like attacking issues which people might think are embarrassing, but I think that we should all be talking about. And I think the way that Gabby talks about periods and the way that she's approached Bloody Good Period is just so inspiring. And really, we should be able to talk about periods openly. You know, 50% of the population have periods. It's something that when people can't talk about things like menstruation and periods, it actually kind of contributes to shame generally and a silencing of women, which is a much bigger issue on top of that. So it's really looking at these problems and then thinking about how you can address them in a creative way, in a fun way, in a way that's going to capture people's imagination. And it actually wasn't that big a leap. Maybe that's just the way my brain works, but I was like, what can I do that's going to really just get people talking? And here we are talking about
them. And what's been the reaction to your macaroons?
It's been actually really positive. I was really surprised that some people, when I first said I was going to do them, were like, oh, you shouldn't do that and it'll be bad for your company and it potentially will have some backlash. And actually the reaction has been universally positive, even to the point where I was in a black taxi when I first launched them and I was talking to a cab driver about them. And he was like, I think that's a great idea. He was like, the reason why men can be embarrassed about periods is because they don't get the opportunity to talk about them enough. And actually, if we were given more opportunity to just have them as a part of a normal conversation, I think it would be less of a problem. And I'm like, well, if the cabbies of London can get behind my tampon macarons, then I think anybody can.
Love it.
And so in the notes, I've got, they're handmade in Bloomsbury.
Yep.
And I think that there's almost a contradiction in the narrative. So you've got delicate white macaron shells filled with fresh vanilla raspberry or rose buttercream and finished with an authentic and edible blue string of raspberry. Each box of eight will contain two bloodied red tampon macarons.
Exactly. That's the point. It's the juxtaposition between the two, which I find really interesting. It's the idea of taking something which is a luxury product. You know, when you think about the tax, VAT on sanitary protection, there's 20% VAT on sanitary protection, but actually macarons are VAT free. So you don't pay VAT on the tampon macarons that I've made. And how outrageous is that? Something that's utterly frivolous. And so it was really taking this thing which is really beautiful, like macarons are very beautiful, and you can see we've packaged them up in a gorgeous gift box and, you know, beautiful ribbon, and people have been gifting them to their friends, and, you know, we've had mostly kind of, you know, men buying them for their girlfriends and things like that. But it's that, which is this kind of really luxurious product, but look, using it to kind of start a really valuable conversation.
I can't believe there's no VAT on macarons. But that is outrageous. I mean, the VAT on sanitary wear is outrageous, but the fact,
So tell us, where does the money go?
So £10 from each box goes directly to Bloody Good Period to help support them and to buy sanitary protection for refugees, asylum seekers and women on low income, and to support the incredible work that Gabby and her team do, because she has this incredible organisation of women that just support her with the work that she does.
Yeah, so to the flip side, someone calls you up and says, this is what I want to do. I mean, what's your immediate response?
Oh, I mean, when Meredith got in touch and was like, I'm going to do bloody tampons, I was like, yes. Like, I think I even wrote to you, like, straight away. I was like, this is exactly what we do. Like, I mean, we called ourselves Bloody Good Period for a reason, not because, because we wanted people to feel a little bit shocked and to be, you know, be like pushed into talking about it. And so when Meredith was like, I'm going to do these bloody tampons, I was like, perfection. Because the people that get offended by them, they can sit and be offended, but, you know, their sensibilities are hurt. But I always think, like, well, do you know what? More offensive are the people sitting there having to scrub blood out of their knickers, basically. That's much more offensive to my sensibilities. So you know, more bloody tampons everywhere, please, you know. So much better.
Gabby, can we rewind a little bit? Because Natalie, she's, you know, a massive fan of yours. But could you, for some of our listeners who are not familiar with Bloody Good Period, perhaps haven't heard you on our show before, can you tell us a bit more about the movement, how it started and where it is today?
Sure. Well, I started October 2016. So I'm a creative, I guess a social change creative, that's sort of what I decided to call myself. I was volunteering at a drop-in centre, an asylum seeker drop-in centre in North London, and I was sent the list of all the things that they were going to be collecting, and there were no period supplies on there. And when I asked if they were going to be collecting them, there was just this sort of almost just embarrassment, oh, we don't really give them out, or we only really give them out in an emergency. And that was my exact reaction. It was the moment that they said, we only give them out in an emergency. I was like, every period without a tampon is an emergency, regardless of who you are, your socioeconomic status, you know, where you are in the world. So straight away, I just decided to start collecting. So I put a little thing on Facebook just to my friends and family saying, can you all just come along and drop some pads off at my house, or, you know, can you send some? I think I expected a few people to get involved and then maybe it was something I would carry on, but within the month I think I had thousands and thousands of pads at my house, and that is how I lived for a year. So just amongst the period paraphernalia. And then pretty quickly, though, I set up it as an organisation, as Bloody Good Period, and we're about to become a charity. We've got over 100 volunteers, which is incredible. And I should point out, the reason that we decided to specialise mostly on with asylum seekers is because they only receive £37 a week to live on, and that is it. They're not allowed to work. They're not even allowed to volunteer very much. So period supplies, they're not cheap. Like Meredith was saying, they're taxed. And they will always come to the bottom of a woman's list. So we decided they absolutely have to be free for these people. And then everybody else, it will become free for everybody else if you're looking after the most marginalised people. Mm. And periods are important. They, you know, if you don't have period protection, you can't go about your day. Mm. We all know that. You know, everyone
well, we had
has
the
a
stories about girls not going to school. Exactly. In some areas.
It holds
we?
You prisoner if you don't have the protection that you need. And so we were just absolutely determined that that is what we were going to do until it's sorted.
Right. Absolutely. Love it.
And so, you know, collaborations aren't straightforward. I'm sure there was lots of negotiation around, well, what will it look like? No,
honestly,
design. It was just like, let's start baking. And
I am a fussy, you know, I'm a designer myself, an artist, and I am fussy about the way things look. And I think it's incredibly important. But when Meredith sent it over, I was like, this is perfect. Mm. And we met, we went for a coffee in town, like before you even started them, I think. And we just clicked. And I think because we're both creative women who just feel very confident about our own abilities, maybe. But yeah, and collaborations can be difficult, but this one was easy as pie or macaron.
I made sure it was really important that I was really respectful to the work that Gabby had done so far. Mm. So I really researched what she'd done and made sure that we were contributing to that message, because I think it's really, really important for small social organisations and charities that you don't have other people coming in and trying to overtake the work they're doing or think that they know better, but really listen about what the needs are and say, I've had this idea, will it help? And if she'd said to me, actually no, I don't think it's right for us, then I would have been completely respectful of that. Alongside that, I really had some incredible help from some other women. So an incredible stylist, Lara Sawyer, that I work with a lot, who styled a photo shoot for me, and another female photographer that came on board. So it was a really kind of collaborative thing, but there was no issue at all. We just kind of got on with it.
Yeah. Was there a lot of product development though to get the right fillings, the right shape, the right blue cords?
I mean, the blue cord was probably the trickiest part, because I remembered we actually made them from raspberry sweets, so kind of that I remembered from a kid, and I remember them. We couldn't find them anywhere, so we kind of, in the end, we got them from a very obscure shop, I think, somewhere in North London. But really, I mean, we make, Ulala specialises in special shaped macarons. So we do things like, we make hamburgers, we've made little ham and lettuce sandwich macarons. And then with my other company, I create really large scale, experiential, immersive experiences. So I'm all about bringing ideas to life and making them a reality. So it really wasn't a problem at all. It happened very smoothly.
What would your top? So going back to the tip that you were giving before around, if you want to work with a social organisation and charity, you don't go in with your preconceived ideas. What are the other tips? Because I'm sure there are people at home saying, you know, I'm running a business and I would love to be able to give back, but they don't know where to start. What would your tips be?
I think the first thing is kind of really make sure that your values are aligned with the values of the people you're trying to help. You know, it would not have worked if I'd gone to Gabby and said, oh, I want to do something for you, but I don't really want to feature blood, or I don't want to talk about those sorts of things, or I'm embarrassed, or that it just wouldn't have been, we wouldn't have been on the same page. So really make sure that your values are aligned. Make sure you're not trying to take any time off them. Yeah. You know, Gabby's absolutely stretched to the maximum in terms of resource. And what I said to her, I said, this is all organised. I have a PR agency. I'm going to make these ourselves. We'll put them online. All you need to do is say yes, and we'll do everything else. And I think not taking from people. Yeah. What else would you say?
Well, like you said, like just listening to what we're already doing and just being like, adding to it. Mm-hmm. So, and not coming, what I just loved about Meredith's initial email was that she just came in and was like, I've done this. I've already thought of all of this all around, and I want to give it to you, basically. And as much as we do love collaborating with creatives that want to sort of get something going, like Meredith said, we're so, so stretched for time. And I think so many social organisations for social good are, I mean, I only work part time for Bloody Good. I'm a nanny as well. So I don't have time to sort of, I would love to, but I don't have time to sit and collaborate creatively, you know, the rest of the week. And so just to be able to just hand us an idea is incredible, but also just to be able to say, if you need to, you can change it.
Yeah, amazing.
And we didn't have to.
So these are macarons.
I got it right.
Yeah, I got it right. Are they available for like a limited time or forever? Like, what's the plan?
So they're available on online at www.ohlala, which is ohlala.co. That's www.ohlala.co. If you go on there, there is a whole page dedicated to the campaign. So just click through and you can buy them online. And they're still available. And Gabby and I have just been talking and we want to keep it running because people are still talking about them. Right. And it's really exciting that we can continue to bring awareness to this issue. And as Gabby said, until it's fixed, until, you know, women are able to, you know, across the UK and then globally are able to get sanitary protection when they need it, we'll keep it going.
Great. Look, well, thank you both for coming in. Thank you, Gabby, as well. And
where can we find you?
You can find us at bloodygoodperiod.com, or you can follow us on Twitter at bloodygood and Instagram at bloodygoodperiod. Oh, excuse me. And yeah, if you just Google us or look for us on Facebook, you can find us. And we need donations of pads all the time, and we need volunteers, especially if you're in London, and you can do a collection for us as well. But there's loads of ways to help, and of course you can buy amazing macarons,
which is at ohlala.com.
yeah,
wonderful. Thank you so much.
This is the Badass Women's Hour podcast.
That was Gabby Edlin talking all about periods and macaroons, two things I think can definitely go together. And now, if you need a little laugh, it's time for the mid-alt.
Now, are you absolutely fine? Are you sure? Are you really sure? Well, in case you're not entirely sure, we have got the authors of I'm Absolutely Fine, A Manual for Imperfect Women, Annabelle Rivkin and Emily McMeekin, in the studio with us. They are the founders of The Mid-Alt, which is basically our favourite website. We're so excited to have them. Welcome, ladies!
Hello! Hi!
Thank you,
so excited to be here.
Annabelle, for anyone who has not had the joy of discovering, tell us what The Mid-Alt is.
The Mid-Alt is, in one word, unfiltered. So really, we just thought that there was an endemic cultural underestimation of grown-up women, and that we were either meant to be sort of deranged cougars or being working mums or, you know, tragic spinsters. And nobody talked to us the way that we talked to each other. So we just thought we'd just do it. And then people started stopping us in the street and saying, how do you know what's inside my head? We thought, oh, interesting, there's some recognition here. And we just thought there was something in the Venn diagram where anxiety meets potential. That's where we sit.
What is a mid-alt? What is the middle?
I think a middle is either a sort of Generation X woman, but actually we found that our audience, our 25 to 35 audience, is the fastest growing as well. So although we hit the 35 to 45 and up sweet spot, lots of people are coming to join us. So we figure.
Tell you what's interesting about that is that we're all sort of educated to believe that you have to look downwards in age for the kernel of any kind of interesting cultural conversation. Mm. But then if you remember being at school, when you were 12, you didn't care what the 9-year-olds are doing. You want to know what the 15-year-olds are doing. So, so these younger women are saying, God, thank God someone's telling us, God someone's talking the truth.
Absolutely. But also having role models, I think for me getting older as well, I've never seen the sort of the role models in the media of women of a certain age that make me go, I want to be that woman when I'm older. Who do I want to be when I grow up? And, you know, like, and that's what's always been missing.
So mine is slightly different. It's having unadulterated, honest, funny conversations. That's the thing. So the social media feed in the morning, if you just want to laugh and realize that everything you thought was important 5 minutes before actually really isn't, it's the place to go. And that's the thing that hooks me in. It's just that actually zero F's given.
I think also the fact that you can have conversations with women which are exactly that are funny, but also that everything's completely imperfect. And I think, like, you know, to your point about what you see in the media, you know, these groomed, elegant, grown-up women, or kind of aga loving you know, shy, and I love an aga, don't get me wrong, but the point is that everything is so neat and tidy. Mm. And, you know, in the rush hour of life that we're in, and in the way that we feel and the way we feel inside, it is not tidy in there. Mm-hmm. And so we just wanted to reflect that
Yeah, it doesn't mean that you're not, you know, hashtag winning. Yes. It just means that you might be, you know, having these feelings while you're hashtag winning.
Yeah, or hashtag winging.
What I really loved about the site is it is really, it's got real attitude. So it's not having, you know, there is that kind of like, oh gosh, we're juggling everything. It's all a bit all over the place and who really knows what we're doing. But it's not having an anxiety attack. It's too adult for that. It's been there, it's done that. And now it's getting on with it.
Well, you know, with being a grown-up comes a kind of, you know, it's a difficult word, but a kind of wisdom. Yeah. Combined with the loss of, and a beard and loss of skin elasticity. But you know what the hell you're talking about to a certain extent. And what was very freeing was having come from a background of journalism where you might have a, you know, particularly me, where you might have a byline and people will write to you and say, how dare you? There are no bylines. And the book is by both of us with other contributors. So it means that we were able to do a sort of collective personal. Mm. So it wasn't attributed. So when we've got, you know, 10 guys you probably slept with, yeah, you will never know who had sex with the IT guy.
We do now.
Yeah, and the other thing as well is that the fact is that I've had a million anxiety attacks and I really have suffered it from it. And so to be able to talk to Annabelle all the time about how I'm feeling and to check in constantly, it's really helped. So I think I've got like a brilliant badass attitude now because I'm like, hey, I can sit in a work loo thinking that like the world is kind of falling apart and I can get out of the loo and sit back at my desk and kind of do a full day's work. And now that I know that I can do that, Jesus, I can do anything.
Yeah. So what was the moment when you decided to create it? How did it come about?
Well, it came about through our friendship. Because we had, you know, there's something really interesting about starting a business with people that you've worked with. Because the women that you've worked with are the people who've seen you every day, not when you put on your best self to go and have a pizza with them, but when you've been, you know, hungover, heartbroken, or just, you know, just wearing your horrible personality on the outside. And, you know, we'd done that and we'd had desks next to each other for 6 years and then we'd worked on and off somewhere else for another 3 years. And really, we wanted to work together before we knew what we wanted to do. And that's what it came out of. And then we started having conversations and we started getting people to, because we didn't have a boardroom, but we did have a kitchen, getting everybody we knew to come and have like spaghetti bolognese. And we did about 20 of those and said, what do you want to talk about? What are you feeling? I remember one time before we one of the reasons that we started talking about this, I went to have dinner with some women. It was during my summer of extreme anxiety and I'm a single mother and I had completely stopped sleeping and I was kind of in a terrible state. And when I'm anxious, I'm like a sort of battery operated toy with no soul. I just keep going and it's sort of quite ugly to see. And someone said, how are you? And I forgot that how are you generally isn't a question. Yeah. And I said, I'm so anxious, I can't sleep and I'm thinking about death all the time. And they all started talking at once. And one said, I think I'm going to on the streets. The other said, I've been on these meds for 2 years. The other said, I don't want to have sex with my husband, but I really love him. And Emily and I started talking. We said, well, this stuff might just be the glue that, and there's no reason why you can't be empowered and still look at what's going on in your life that is really troubling and really imperfect.
Absolutely.
And now, like, when I ask someone, how are they always tell me, which is, I think, a function of knowing that we're putting our stuff out there all the time. Yeah. And that, you know, that the key is connection, isn't it? And so when you know that someone is going to tell you something honestly or honestly how they feel, they start sharing too. So I was at a school concert the other day and I said, how are you? And she said, I don't feel validated at work. I've got a chest infection and I think my therapist may be a bit of an idiot. And I was like, well, my therapist is going to Peru for 6 weeks. So thank you. So how do I feel? And we both laugh. And around us, everybody's looking, going, oh, yeah, this is a conversation. Yeah. And I think it's so important to be able to talk about that.
Sometimes
stuff.
We think that women are only allowed to be one thing. You're only allowed to be the boss or the slut or the mother. And we just think it's much more textured than that. And the other thing that we wanted for the mid-adult was to lovingly remove children from the conversation. Because there's lots of brilliant stuff that aggregates around motherhood, and that's great. And there's a nice child-free movement, that's great. But what about a place where it's irrelevant whether you've got kids or not, whether you've been sort of verified in that way? And certainly for me, who was desperate for a baby and then eventually had one by myself, the pain of not having a child was very real. So I felt like a bridge between those two worlds, the sort of married mothers and the women who really wanted to have children, it wasn't happening. Yeah. So we just thought we didn't want people to be, you know, emotionally stabbed every time they logged on to something that we were doing or something that we were talking about.
That is so fascinating because we were talking about the show when we were chatting about you coming on. We were saying one of the things that's so interesting is it's not kind of that, and we've had kids and we're going to talk about everything to do with our kids. It's, you know, it's there, but it's not
No, it's part of the landscape, but it's quite remote, and there are no husbands either.
Did you find when you were at that point where you wanted a child, but you couldn't, that literally every time you opened a browser, there was another article on parenting?
Oh, no, I got really grief stricken. I mean, I couldn't look at nappy adverts on the side of buses. I turned them off on the telly. I had a sort of internal monologue of hate every time I saw a pregnant woman. I felt like I was looking at death. It was, you know, it really was. It was bad. And I am not sure that people who haven't experienced it really would understand it. But yes, I did get to that point.
And when you decided you were just going to do it by yourself, what was the moment that you said, okay, I can do this?
I'm not sure there is a moment.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of work and a slow dawning. And in my case, my child has a father, but we're not together. So I'm very, very lucky. But what it did do was it made me a kind of touchstone for women who are doing it genuinely by themselves. So, you know, people will turn up on the doorstep sometimes. And there are certainly five women in my immediate circle who've had baby with sperm donors. And it's amazing to see. And in my case, what was interesting was separating a parental fit from a romantic fit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So what I've got is effectively a really happy divorce.
Yeah.
You know, but no one was unfaithful. No one tried to steal anyone's house.
Yeah. And have you found now that as this sort of beacon for every woman's kind of, oh my gosh, I've got to tell someone about this, please let me, is there a point where you're like, oh, it would be so nice to go back to the days where I say, how are you, and everyone says, oh, fine?
No, actually, not at all. I for us, being on receive is sometimes more exciting than being on transmit. And also, we need them to, because otherwise, what are we going to talk about?
But I get really emotional when people, and they do, they in any way that they try and get hold of us through all of our social channels or just on email, and they say, how did you know? How did you get into my head? Or all, and I get really emotional about that because, you know, someone sent me a text reading the book and said, the thing is that you say how we all feel, and I say, well, I'm so pleased you say that because that means I'm not alone either. You know, and I think that it's just a constant flow.
But also I think there's been a bit of a conspiracy of silence around women's inner lives and quite a lot of, you know, men telling us how to be and how to think, and quite a lot of misrepresentation. So the more we hear about it, the more that people feel, it's really wonderful for us that people would feel recognised.
Yeah.
Rather than isolated. That really was a kind of aim. We're just at some point in the day, whether it's when, you know, you log on to the Instagram feed or someone or you read a piece on the website, if someone just thinks, you know, I'm not alone, because we just think if we're not in it together, we're not in it at all. So it's lovely that.
And we get.
Oh. I was going to say the reason I'm quiet is because I'm actually on your Instagram.
I was just thinking.
I am on your feed. Absolutely. Just it's hilarious. I have two moods: constant panic and worrying about every little detail, or two, it is what it is. Yeah. That is my day. That is my life. In the morning, it's panic, and then 5 minutes later, it's like it is what it is.
But that's the thing: is the immediacy of the trigger. Yeah. It's not like in the morning it's panic, in the evening no, it's at 8 o'clock it's panic, and it's at 8:01 it's, you know, resignation.
Also, I think that we were talking about this the other day, that we're all lazy perfectionists.
Yeah.
Like, it would be so great to get everything right all the time, but we just don't have the energy.
Don't you just love ironed sheets? Me too. Do you have ironed sheets?
No, not so much. Going to a hotel is like the most exciting thing for the linen.
Yes, that's the other thing. So we're finding that women talk about sleep more than they talk about sex.
Yeah.
What are the key lessons that you've learned about women since starting this that you didn't know before? We talk about sleep more than we talk about sex. What else?
We're always hungry.
Nothing good happens after 3 a.m.
Go home at 12.
That's very true.
That you will always have a rogue hair somewhere.
Yes.
And you won't notice it until it's waving in the breeze.
Oh my goodness, what is that? There wasn't one this morning, and now it's 2 o'clock and it's there.
Do you know, there's this thing called FaceApp that I was playing with my best friend, and you can make yourself a man, or you make yourself old, and you can give yourself a beard. And I have to tell you, and this is, thank God, considering what's going on my chin, I am a hot bearded man.
I have to say, I can vouch.
I look like a Russian poet.
Should we call you Gregorich or something?
Yeah. Absolutely love it. And so you've combined all of this wisdom and brilliance into a book. I'm absolutely fine. And I've got it open on page 152, which is 10 childhood punishments that are now threats.
Treats.
That was my Freudian slip. You are not going to that party.
Yeah, you've got to stay at home. Yeah. Oh. I know. Yeah. Isn't that bliss?
Oh, man. You are going to bed early.
Yep. Get to bed.
Yep. Poor you.
Happiness.
Yeah. Go to your room and read.
Yeah, that'll teach you.
You have to be home by 10 p.m. That is the best thing ever. When Love Island was on, using it as an excuse to be able to leave somewhere.
But Emily's got best excuse because Emily is very sunshiny and I'm quite brimstony. So it's quite good cop, bad cop. So she's a compulsive volunteer. So if you wanted to dress as an elf and man a stall somewhere, she will do it. But her therapist said to her, you know what, maybe think twice. So now if someone asks Emily to do something, she says, sorry, I can't. My shrink told me not to.
Which is so brilliant because they can't threaten your mental health. They could coerce me in every other possible way. But if they think that there might be a chance that I might lose it, that so they just sort of back away slowly.
So her Saturday afternoons are completely reinvented.
Absolutely love it.
We are going to keep talking to the fantastic Emily McMeekin and Annabelle Rifkin from The Mid-Alt for more of their wisdom coming up, including I'm going to learn what a penis pal is. We're going to learn how not to be an a-hole and the backhanded compliments you didn't know were actually really not compliments.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss. There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
This is the Badass Women's Hour podcast. You can get in touch on all the socials on @BadassWomen'sHour.
I mean, we've just been giggling for the whole of the break because we have got the fabulous Annabelle Rifkin and Emily McMeekin from The Mid-Alt in the studio with us. We are talking about their new book, I'm Absolutely Fine, A Manual for Imperfect Women. And I was having a flick through and I opened the page at the question, do you have a penis pal? Ladies, please explain what a penis pal is.
Simply put, Harriet, it's a woman who slept with the same man that you have.
I mean, that is just joy.
Oh, that's not what I thought it was.
No, that's what it is. And the fun part is, she might not even know your penis pals.
Oh. The even more fun thing is that he might not know that you both know.
That you are penis pals. It's very nuanced.
I like it. Yeah, I like it.
I actually had dinner with a penis pal last night. She lasted longer than he did, I'll tell you that.
Absolutely love it.
I love that. But the book, I mean, it is filled with some brilliant lists and some truly hilarious quotes, but there's also some really kind of beautiful, moving essays in there. And one of them that I saw was To Women Who Leave, which is about the concept of women who decide, actually, I'm leaving their marriage. And I don't think we really talk about that, do we? We always talk about, you know, are you going to hold on to him? Is it okay? What's happening? Actually, there are lots.
Do you know what? I'm not sure that people actually ask women about their relationships once they're married. I think it goes further back than that. You know, you start dating, oh, what's it like? And where did you go? And how's the sex? And is he nice? And oh my God, and you didn't really. And then you're engaged, and then it's the wedding, and then nothing.
Yeah.
How are you getting on? Is it all right? Yeah. Are you happy?
Are you still having
sex?
There's
almost a taboo, I think. I almost feel like friends don't want to talk about their marriage. I don't know. I do feel like they're less open about. They're less open about their challenges. Normally, it's not until they hit a catastrophe or really crisis that suddenly they start sharing things with me
that
I've never heard before. Mm. Yeah, and I don't know what it is. Whether you've got to have a, you know, that once you hit being married, is there a perception that you have to create that you've got the happy home and you're
going
to live happy?
An aspect of perfection,
yeah,
the perfect
marriage.
You've
got to live happily ever after because that's the expectation, right?
Yeah, and I think with so much of the way that our narratives are, aren't they? That we're, you know, for women, that we're there to be kind of, you know, asked. We're there to be plucked from, you know, and this is at work as well. And I think that, you know, when you make a decision to walk away from something, be it a marriage or a job or any kind of relationship, it's quite a big deal. It flows against the sort of the idea of what we should be doing.
Well, also, and also the perception that the idea of being independent, you know, by which I mean being single. I don't even like the word single because it has got that unplucked flower of a millennia narrative to it, as Emily was saying. The idea of being independent is worse than being in a very unhappy relationship. Very risky. Who will take her on now? You know, will she be alone forever? Well, maybe that's better.
Yes. Back on the shelf. All that stuff, which is such a negative attitude towards, you know, women and how we want to live in the world.
Yeah, men don't get it. Like, men get, I wonder if there's someone I can introduce him to.
Yeah.
On the point about marriage, the different perspectives. So my friends don't pry in other friends' marriages, partly because they say that the person that they're married to is now their person. So whereas before we were a group of girlfriends and we were each other's person, that is now their person.
Don't you think it's unrealistic to think you can get everything from one person?
Yeah. It just changes overnight. Once that marriage happens, everyone just stops. And it's like, actually, the conversations we used to have, we can't have them anymore because we're not that close. And it's like,
which means that means that the wife just gets isolated.
Yeah.
Mm. And that's a dangerous position to be in. Yeah. So Emily and I are now those people who, when someone comes back from a honeymoon, go, how was it? Mm. Are you okay? Did you get on?
Yeah.
I love that. Are you still married? How long do you think it's now going to last? should we buy you that wedding present we forgot to get for the wedding?
And also with 50% of marriages ending in divorce, I mean, it's not exactly, these stats are not...
It's not shocking.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's going to happen. I mean, it's going to happen to one in two marriages. So we might as well all, you know, talk about it before. Also, I think the other thing is that, again, you know, that to the woman who leave essay is also about being brave about what you want. Mm. I think, you know, sometimes it is okay to change your mind and say, actually, this isn't what I wanted, or this is not working for whatever reason.
And to press reset, which does get harder when you have more responsibilities, but, you know, it's still possible.
Do you think we judge ourselves for putting ourselves first? I was explaining to Em before the show, I did something that to other people would be considered selfish. I put myself over a family member because it was what was best for me. But to explain it to someone that didn't know me, I can see they'd be like...
100%. And when I talked about my anxiety attacks, and when I went to see my therapist for the first time, she's like, okay, so you're on a plane and the oxygen mask comes down and you put the oxygen mask on your face and then you help everyone. And I was like, I'm sorry, what? What do you mean on me first? And she was like, it was sessions before I could accept that it was even a possibility that I would put it on myself first so that I could breathe and then therefore help everybody else. For me, it was immediately find as many people to give oxygen to. And I think we forget that
if you've got no oxygen, then you're not much good to anyone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that we have to look after ourselves. And, you know, sometimes you do have to put yourself first. Mm. And that is also okay.
But it's not what we're sold. It's not what we're told. And it's definitely not
what people
think.
We're meant to be nurturing to the point where we extinguish ourselves.
Yeah.
And I'm just not sure that narrative is okay anymore. Particularly as we get older. That saying that once you get to sort of 35, men get distinguished and women get extinguished. Yeah. And the mid-adult is not about that.
Yes, definitely
not. We're just lighting fires all over.
What are some of the key kind of myths around women you'd like to see gone? Yeah, I love that women get extinguished. No, we're going to light that fire again.
Yeah.
What else do you think we need to leave behind?
It's quite fun to suddenly be a rebel when you're 40.
It's perfect time for it.
Because Emily and I were both good girls.
Yeah.
You know, and now suddenly we've got a sort of counter proposal.
How has the publishing industry reacted to this? Because it is, we were talking about women's publishing a lot earlier in the show, and we were talking about Tess Holliday being on the front cover of Cosmopolitan and how women's magazines have, you know, traditionally talked to and about women. And this is really, like, the mid-alt really does kind of rip it up and be like, nope, all that stuff you were sold in Ms. Magazine in 1997, don't listen to it. This is what you need to know.
Ms. Magazine.
What has been the response to it?
Well, it's hard to know because it only came out on two days ago. But I think what we've seen happening is a lot of people in publishing and in industry sort of paying lip service to looking after women or listening to women, and you know, and standing on a podium and saying we're trying to do better, and then thinking that the job is done.
Yeah, just by saying it. I know I sat next to someone at a bank at a dinner a few years ago, and she was the woman's representative there, and I said, "How's it going?" "Oh, that's so brilliant. You're the women's representative of this big bank. Brilliant." And she's like, "No, that is basically it. They just point and go, oh no, we've got you. You're the women's representative. we're done. And you just think, oh my goodness, no.
Not good enough.
Not good enough. And I think hopefully, you know, I mean, I think it's one of those strange things, but this year I think I've only read books written by women, which is amazing, right? And it's not a deliberate kind of, you know, I'm not going to read books by men, but it's just all loads of huge, brilliant titles coming out all the time. This, like, women's fiction is having a real moment, etc. And I think nonfiction too, and there's so many great, you know, there's so much energy around it. So I'm thrilled that we're part, hopefully, you know, part of a massive movement.
Yeah, and you know, we just sort of suspect that imperfection might be the next big thing, like an extension of self-care, not just dealing with your imperfections, living with them and not being ashamed of them, but kind of advertising them and saying, this is the texture of who I am, these are the colours of my rainbow.
Do we change the word? I mean, is it even about perfection or imperfection? It's just, this is who I am.
Yeah,
it's about identity in the end.
Yeah.
And truthfulness.
Do you think we're getting more of that, though? I feel like there's, like, Wanderlust, for instance, that's out. That's a very different
narrative.
Yeah, but
there's also Love Island, where they've all had their tits, noses, cheeks and teeth done by the time they're 18. And then they've had no chance whatsoever to accept themselves. And the grown-up women we talk to will often say, yeah, I was desperate for a nose job at 18. And now, thank God I've got my nose. It's who I am. Mm.
Yeah.
Do you think Instagram, your Instagram is, we've talked about it, it's absolutely hilarious. But there's also a big cult on Instagram of, my life isn't perfect. Look at this small imperfection that I'm going to magnify for you and talk about as though it's the biggest thing in the world to show you that I am not truly perfect.
Those long captions.
It's a very long caption, yes. And that to me seems like this other side of imperfection, which is embracing imperfection, but not really, because we're just doing it to kind of make ourselves more perfect. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's a bit weird.
Yes, to say, yes, look at my honesty, admire me for that.
Yeah,
I know. But you know, we can all criticise each other. I think you just... The thing to do is to engage with what you want to engage with rather than what you think you should.
Yeah.
You know, we had a really weird meeting where some girls wanted to see us in their 20s, and they said, we are interested, and they used the phrase, we're interested in self-perfection. Can you help? And I remember saying to one of them, however flattering the lighting, I'm not perfect, so no. And secondly, I think that really what you're at risk of is extreme boringness.
Yeah.
If that's what you're looking for, who are you?
Yeah.
Also, to believe that you can control everything around you to such an extent that it all turns out how you want to.
Yes, they would say, when's the best time to have a baby? Well, yeah, good luck with that.
Yeah. You've got something in the book, actually, about embracing the... unleash your inner weirdo. See, I think this is one of the most underrated things ever. Everyone likes... at a dinner party now, I'm not interested in the person that gives me the same old, same old. Give me that person that's saying completely random, hilarious things that's going to light up my life for that evening. It might be really tiresome if, you know, I was the other half. But for that dinner party, it's fabulous. And I think seeing that side of women and seeing that side of my friends just makes me love them even more.
Well, your inner weirdo is a little bit of yourself that thinks it's okay to be you. And thinks it's funny when you're a bit of an idiot and you have a terrible shame over and you get everything wrong. And your inner weirdo is the thing that makes you, interesting, as you say, rather than the person who talks about curation and road mapping and strategy.
Yeah.
It's so funny, though, isn't it? Because I do find that the people that are most interesting are the people that don't seem to have that shame filter. They don't buy into that. They are totally themselves. And
did they get there?
Yeah, well, I don't know. But you're always drawn to those people.
But also, one of the things about the middle was that we think our generation of women grew up with a lot of shame.
Yeah.
And, you know, shame cannot survive being spoken.
Yeah.
So if you put it out there, it neutralises it, really. It just puts a little bomb off inside it. And, that's it, gone. It's okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And once you've stopped pretending as well, it's quite hard to go back. Like, it would be quite hard for me to actually say nothing when someone said, how are you? Or just say, without that. And I think that's great. I don't want to go back. Because when I was in that zone of pretending that everything was okay, I was, hearing voices and quietly going mad. So
you still have to pick your moments, though. I've got to say, like, I'll be quite open about if I'm not okay. But you do have to judge it in terms of who you're going to say.
But sometimes people aren't interesting enough to tell about yourself.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. It's true.
You know, so you know, there's a bit in the book which says it's not me, it's you.
Yeah,
it's not always our fault.
Yeah, it's true. It's everybody else.
You know, Emily and I generally think it is our fault. We're always slightly sorry about everything, but maybe sometimes you don't deserve to have that little slice of me.
Yeah. You've got tiny ways to be outrageous. I'm not sure they are outrageous. Have delivery every night for a week. That's basically my standard life. I've always been anti-smoking, but my neighbours smoke something that they're not supposed to smoke. And I'm every now and then I'm like, that'd be nice. And add an extra hour to the cleaner. We had this conversation with H the other day. She's not
I love
at
my cleaner,
peace
but
with it yet.
I have serious middle class guilt about my cleaner.
Yeah, you've
got the guilt. And I clean before I have a male cleaner. I clean before he comes.
Harriet.
I have a male
You've
cleaner.
Got a male cleaner.
Emily's cleaner is called Barry.
I love Barry.
You've got a male cleaner.
Yeah, Victor.
But you clean before he comes.
I clean before he comes to make it easier for him.
Okay. I tidy before Barry comes too.
I tidy up a little bit. I mean, I pick my pants up off the floor. I mean, I just think that's courtesy, isn't it?
It is, but yeah, an extra hour.
Yeah, an extra hour on the cleaner because it is great when you open the fridge and it's really clean.
When you open the front door and you actually can.
Hang on a minute, it's Saturday night and you're talking about the highlight of your day is opening the fridge and it's clean.
Yeah, I like also to see the Hoover marks on the carpet.
Sometimes I just open my linen cupboard and look at it, and then close it again and walk away, and I feel safe.
Sometimes I just open Annabelle's linen closet.
If anyone is listening, this is still the Badass Women's Hour.
I do love, though, how we've circled back round to linen. This is how we started. This is where we're ending. There's a linen sponsorship in the offing any second now.
Either way, they're not outrageous, is what I was going to say.
We have loved having you on the show.
Oh, thank you for having us.
If you
thank
want you. More of this absolute brilliance, I'm Absolutely Fine, A Manual for Imperfect Women, is out now. Annabelle Rifkin and Emily McMeekin are the founders of The Midult. Go and check it out. Ladies, where can people find it?
Well, they can find us on Instagram at The Midult or www.themidult. Is that how many W's did I say? Whatever. The World Wide Web. themidult.com. And on Twitter at The Midult.
You have been absolutely brilliant. We have learnt a lot. Thank you so much.
You've been listening to Badass Women's Hour. If you like the show, then help more people find us. You can tag us or talk to us on social media using @BadassWomen'sHour. Or you can be really lovely and leave us a review and a rating. 5 stars, please. It helps boost us up the podcast rankings and allows other people to find us. We'll be back next week with more badass guests and in-depth chat.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Spin your passion into a business with Shopify and break sales records with the world's best converting checkout. Let's hear that one more time. The world's best converting checkout. Shopify's legendary checkout makes it easier for customers to shop on your website, across social media, and everywhere in between. Now that's music to your ears. Any way you spin it, you can be a smash hit with Shopify. Start your $1 a month trial today at shopify.com/records.